Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, President Trump is expected to visit Wheeler High School in Marietta next week. The FIFA World Cup enters its final weekend, and Rick Jackson holds his first rally since winning the Republican nomination.
As governor, I will treat affordability like a crisis, because for too many families, it already is.
Today is Friday, July 17th. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. President Donald Trump did not mention Georgia in his primetime address, doubling down on debunked election theories last night. Many expected a Georgia reference because of his fixation on his 2020 election loss in the state, but documents released by the White House in connection with the speech allege the People's Republic of China has a copy of Georgia's voter rolls. Like most states, Georgia's voter lists are publicly available for purchase on the Secretary of State's website. David Becker of the Center for Election Innovation and Research says that does not mean Georgia's elections were compromised.
I could have a list of all the students at a particular university. That doesn't mean I can change their grades. And that's what's happening here. Just having the data doesn't give you an ability to access their voter record. You need many, many more private, personally identifiable information points, things like driver's license numbers, dates of birth, social security numbers, which aren't in this data, to even begin to think about doing that.
Georgia U.S. Senator John Ossoff, speaking today in Rome, blasted the speech.
Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. He tried to overturn the result, and he failed, and he's now wasting the country's time relitigating a six-year-old election when the war in the Middle East is spiraling out of control.
Ossoff says the president's speech signals Trump's aim to interfere in the upcoming midterm elections. Republican gubernatorial candidate Rick Jackson campaigned on his similarities to President Donald Trump in the primary election, but last night in his first rally of the general election, he didn't mention the president's name. GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Jackson focused his speech on his background growing up in foster care and bringing down the cost of living by reducing property and income taxes.
As governor, I will treat affordability like a crisis, because for too many families, it already is.
He also attacked his opponent, Democratic nominee and former Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. Bottoms, meanwhile, has focused on reducing the cost of living in her campaign stops and has held two joint rallies with Democratic Senator John Ossoff. The election is on November 3rd. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Cleveland.
President Trump is expected to visit a Georgia high school next week. The president is scheduled to visit Wheeler High School in Marietta on Wednesday. He's expected to highlight policies aimed at affordability. Argentina and Spain will face off in the FIFA World Cup final in New Jersey on Sunday for the chance to be named soccer's world champions. The South Americans, led by Lionel Messi, rallied to beat England in the semifinal in Atlanta on Wednesday. That match was the last of eight that the city hosted over the past month, as more than a half million fans came to watch the world's best play in Atlanta. But it's not the last thing we have to talk about with GPB's John Nelson. He joins us now to preview the tournament's final weekend. John, it's great to talk with you again.
As always, my friend, great to see you. I know that you've gotten more sleep than I have over the last 6 weeks.
It was a lack of sleep for a great thing. It was great soccer played. Let's talk with you about the final, the defending champions versus the odds-on favorite. What does each team bring to the match?
Oh, boy. With Spain, you have a suffocating defense and some great stars on offense. For Argentina, you have the aura of a defending champion. You have a team that does not quit. And I was discussing this with my wife, actually. And we were talking about Argentina, and one of our favorite documentaries is the documentary of North Carolina State when they won the national championship in college basketball 40 years ago. And their point guard, Derek Wittenberg, was always talking about in the documentary that they were trailing and they were always coming from behind. It's like they were comfortable there when they were down. And that's what you ended up with Argentina, a team that did not quit. And there were some issues, obviously, with England and their defending and doing it entirely too early. And Argentina took advantage of it, and that's why they're playing for back-to-back.
And Spain?
Spain, like I said, is just suffocating defensively. And when you've got an offense like what you have with Lamine Yamal and Mikel Oyarzabal, it is going to be an interesting clash of styles when it comes to this match. How does Spain approach it? Do they just go pedal down? Do they try and suffocate Argentina like England tried and did so unsuccessfully? I'm intrigued, and me and about a billion other folks will be just as intrigued.
As we noted earlier in the program, Sunday is the 30th anniversary of the 1996 Olympic Games opening ceremony in Atlanta. Once World Cup 2026 ends, how do you think its legacy will hold up in light of the Olympic legacy?
Wow. I think that if you look at it by the numbers, 544,000 people went to go see all eight matches total at Atlanta Stadium, as we call it then. Then you had the fan festival that had another 500,000 folks, 27,000 guests each day. You had all the media coming from 82 countries. You had MARTA moving 2.5 million people, which is usually, I think it's 200% increase as to what they're used to doing. And so I think it's just another mark for the city of Atlanta and for the southeastern United States about what Atlanta brings to the table as the home for soccer in the United States.
Well, I'll remember all the jersey-wearing fans
Absolutely.
Walking around my neighborhood, and I live 2 miles away.
I'm like... That's the cool part of this. And it wasn't just the nations that were playing on that day. It was a chance for anyone who is a fan of insert country here to show their support. It was a chance for me to empty out my wallet and get gear from Uzbekistan and Cabo Verde and DR Congo, and the boss has already claimed it all. So, I mean, it's a way to remember and reinforce what's good about us as a people and what sport can do as a unifier.
Thank you so much for your expertise. We appreciate it.
Anytime, my friend. It's always great to talk about the beautiful game.
Sunday will mark 30 years since the opening ceremony at the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta. It comes as the city wraps up another milestone, serving as a host city in the FIFA World Cup. Soccer fans and brothers Marcus and John Makar were at the city's last World Cup match on Wednesday, and remember the 96 games.
I had an international hostel out in Decatur, and we had a restaurant, so it was just work all the time, but it was a lot of fun. It was great. Were you around? No. You were too young.
I came in. Three guys from my high school in Tulsa, Oklahoma were in the Olympics that year.
GPB celebrates the Olympic anniversary with the documentary The Games in Black and White. The film highlights the key friendship between Ambassador Andrew Young and Olympic CEO Billy Payne.
Who would have thought that today, this story from 30 years, 35 years ago, would have the kind of social relevance and meaning and importance, a critical message for our time?
If you want to learn more about the history of how the Olympics came to Atlanta, you can watch the documentary The Games in Black and White on our website. Go to gpb.org and search for The Games in Black and White to watch on demand. It's also on the GPB app and will air on GPB television on July 27th at 9:30 p.m. And in Atlanta tomorrow afternoon, a special screening featuring the film's director, producer, and writer will take place at the Terra Theater at 1:30. The organizers of the 35-year-old Savannah Bridge Run have canceled this year's event because of what they're calling circumstances beyond their control. About 5,000 runners and walkers race across the city's iconic and relatively steep Talmadge Memorial Bridge each December in what organizers call the South's toughest bridge run. It's also the only time pedestrians are allowed on the bridge. Organizers wrote in an email sent yesterday that the 2026 run is canceled because of upcoming bridge renovations. A Georgia Department of Transportation spokesperson says the agency is planning to shorten the bridge's cables later this year as part of a project to raise the bridge's deck between 15 to 20 feet to allow larger ships to pass underneath the bridge. That project is expected to close lanes on the bridge. An artificial intelligence data center company is expanding in Columbus with a 5-year, $111 million agreement. Florida-based Duos Edge AI announced the contract with an undisclosed company yesterday. Choose Columbus, the local development authority's marketing arm, says it's not connected to the controversial Project Ruby data center project. outdoor lifestyle brand L.L. Bean plans to open its first location in Georgia. National retail developer Edens said on Wednesday that L.L. Bean will anchor a new mixed-use destination, Lula Hills, going into the site of the former North DeKalb Mall in Decatur. And in Georgia sports, the Atlanta Hawks have announced Atlanta-based Gray Media as their broadcast partner for all non-nationally televised regular season games. The announcement yesterday secures Hawks broadcasts across the state following the closure of Main Street Sports Group, which also impacted Atlanta Braves broadcasts. And finally today, Alan Walden, one of the key figures in the city of Macon's rise to international musical fame, has died. Walden and his brother Phil had their first taste of success managing soul music artists like Otis Redding. After Redding's death, they and a third partner started the Capricorn Studio and label, home to the Allman Brothers Band, in Macon. In a 2018 interview with GPB, Alan Walden said he gave up his share of the Capricorn business for a chance to go out on his own and manage bands his brother passed on, like Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I gave all that up for $9,000 and an IBM typewriter and my Rolodex. That's all I asked for. And my Cadillac.
Walden managed Lynyrd Skynyrd while they enjoyed their biggest hit, Sweet Home Alabama. Alan Walden was 83 years old. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. Hit subscribe on this podcast to stay current with us in your feed. Send us feedback to georgiatoday@gpb.org. And as always, visit gpb.org/news for many of the stories that you hear on this podcast and others. That's it for me this week. It's been a pleasure filling in for Peter Biello this week. He'll be back again on Monday for another edition of Georgia Today.